This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. With the historic Detroit bankruptcy filing, there has been plenty of talk about money, taxes, about shrinking revenue, rising legacy costs. But my next two guests strongly believe all of those dollar-based conversations overlook one of the biggest reasons that people leave Detroit and why they don't want to come back and live in Detroit. And that reason is crime. According to emergency manager Kevin Orr's report to the city's creditors, Detroit's violent crime rate is 5 times the national average, and it takes Detroit police an average of 58 minutes to respond to a call, where the national average is 11 minutes. Those harsh realities are just the tip of the iceberg. Let's talk more about how these chronic, stubbornly high levels of crime affect Detroit's recovery and what can be done going forward to make Detroit a safer place to live and work. Joining me now is Carl Taylor, professor of sociology at Michigan State University.
Thank you.
And the former deputy editorial page director for the Detroit News, Jeff Haddon, in the studio with me. Hello, Jeff.
Hi.
I want to start with your thoughts, Carl. With all the talk about what is wrong with Detroit as the bankruptcy filing has happened, is the persistently high crime rate being talked about enough in your view?
No, it's not. Not even remotely. Because you have to talk about poverty and a lot of other complex issues that are not being talked about. Everything is focusing on money and pension, and that certainly is very, very important. And that also has a direct impact on crime because you're talking about public safety. So you're talking about the firefighters and the policemen. So I think there needs to be a great, a lot more focus on crime.
And Jeff, as someone who's been, you know, decades in journalism, what's your view on why crime has not figured in the conversation as much?
Because I think it's like background noise that after you hear it long enough, it fades into the background. You don't. So we have had a constant drumbeat for years and years of years of 325, 340 homicides per year, a higher than average crime rate, and people just get inured to it. But it is it tears the fabric of neighborhoods. It tears away the livability of the city. It affects everybody at a level of at a sort of existential level. I mean, am I going to be hurt today? Is my child going to be hurt today? Is it safe for them to go to school? This is not something that's conducive to revitalizing a city.
Carl Taylor, you wrote a guest opinion piece for the Detroit Free Press talking about what you described as urban terrorism. Tell us, what did you mean by that, and give us a sense of what it's like day to day for citizens and for neighborhoods?
Well, I caught a lot of heat for that, using that term terrorism, both from the academy and also from some in the community. I meant it as I'm a native of Detroit, grew up in Detroit, and I'm a product of Detroit public schools. I received a very good education, and I lived in Detroit. I grew up in right up until the riot. That's when I went away to college. I'm talking about being able to function as a normal person, a human being that can take their kids to school, kids can walk to school without being harmed. I'm talking about the intimidation that goes on many times, the fear. And it's like two different worlds, what I grew up in Detroit and what exists today. So you're speaking of abandoned houses. But far more important, I'm looking at the attitude of those who are transgressors. But I do have to underscore, as I was chastised, and rightfully so, that I'm not talking about the thousands of decent Americans who are working very hard in Detroit. So I don't want to give one size fits all. But crime is extreme in many areas in the neighborhoods and in Detroit. So we have to address that. So you're just afraid. You cannot have a quality of life that I had as a young man coming up in Detroit.
And talk about the attitude of the transgressors, because you kind of seize on that. Your view, what is it and where does it stem from?
Well, that's a great question. I think one that we should walk very slowly with.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the transgressors, we have issues of dysfunctional families to the extreme that we were warned about earlier from people like Daniel Monahan and others. We have a large, I think, segment that are suffering from mental health issues that no one wants to talk about. You cannot close down the facilities and remove the type of support that you need for mental health without having the backlash that we are seeing now. And then we have some that are dedicated to crime. They see crime is an institution that if they can't fulfill their dreams in the traditional avenues, and employment is one of those big avenues, then they feel that crime is a paying institution, and it is to a large degree. So I think those are the variables, but I walk very cautiously as I point those out.
Mm-hmm.
We look at unemployment as unbelievable. When I was a young boy coming up in Detroit as a teenager, I had a choice of jobs, a lot of employment. So that I went to Roosevelt, Durfee, and Central. So I walk very gingerly, I have to say that, because if you don't, and I think it only further divides the community and makes it ugly.
And, Jeff, I know you're a born and bred Detroiter and has you too have the perspective of many decades. So what would you like to add to this?
I totally agree with what Carl says about it hurting the fabric of the neighborhoods and about sort of the family dysfunction and family breakdown on the part of many in Detroit. And I agree with Carl. You don't want to use too broad a brush here because there are hardworking moms who are doing the best they can by their kids. I worked at the paper, the Detroit News, for years with products of single families who their mother beat their brains out. They went to Wayne. They're productive, hardworking folks, and that's fine. The Michigan Citizens Research Council did a study and said that Detroit has the highest percentage of single female-headed households of any major city in the country. I think the general agreement is that if you have young men who don't have a man in their life, doesn't have to be a father, but it could be a minister, it could be an uncle, it could be an older brother, somebody looking out for him, somebody making sure that he's growing up with the right attitudes,
mm-hmm.
you are going to have a problem with that young man. Of any race. There's a British psychiatrist named Anthony Daniels who writes under the nom de plume Theodore Dalrymple, who's done similar studies of family dysfunction in northern British cities like Manchester or Scottish cities mm-hmm. like Glasgow. They're big industrial centers. They have the same kind of issues at Detroit. You have the same kind of family breakdown. You have the same issue. So it's not a racial thing. It's a sociological thing.
And how in the world do you put that back together as you are trying to put Detroit back together?
Well, you have to. We're not addressing that at all. And I'm glad to hear him say in relation that it's a problem. And it has been. But I think we have to be careful, again, in relation to single-headed female households. I was it's my brother Virgil and I. We were raised by my parents until my dad passed when I was 13 in Detroit. But my father, my parents, the structure was there, the law was there. And so, for example, if we were going off track, my mother only had to say, you can stand up and be a man like your father expects you to be. She ruled and the discipline was there. But the discipline and the standard was there in the community of Northwest Detroit, where I grew up, that the Taylor boys belonged to the community. So if you saw us doing something wrong, you could do whatever, including... You know, you could let us have it physically. And we would pray to God that you wouldn't call, my parents. But I think a lot of female households have raised and produced very strong sons. This is nothing new as a phenomenal social phenomenon in America. You have Irish and Italians and Jewish and a lot of single-headed female households. The difference is the attitudes that we're seeing now from parents, whether they're single or two-headed households. And I'm seeing in Detroit and in other communities, but in particular in Detroit, a lot of parents that support behavior and attitudes that leads to a lot of problems. That's just a total disrespect and a disconnect from authority. So it's not simply that they're not going along with what the teachers say. They don't respect anything. And that's something that is, to me, in my research, and my research parallels others, what we're seeing in terms of statistics, but I'm seeing something quite different and have been for the last three decades. I've seen an erosion of parental guidance and authority. And so, for example, a lot of times the parents are supporting their children, and in particular young men, in this behavior that we are not addressing. And it's internal and it's external. And I think we better followed that right away.
That was Carl Taylor. He's a professor of sociology at Michigan State University. And also we're speaking with Jeff Haddon, who's the former deputy editorial page director for the Detroit News. And Jeff joins us in the studio. And someone touched on that issue of greater divisions. And this is certainly something that you tread lightly as you discuss, because it's so easy to have non-Detroiters say, well, see, that's them. And here's something one of our coworkers overheard this few days ago on a flight back to Detroit. She overheard a fellow passenger as they were talking about the bankruptcy. And the quote was, I wish we could just dump Detroit into the lake. We'd all be better off. Do either of you think sentiments like that stem from the crime headlines more than the financial headlines? Jeff, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it does. It's I think the crime issue is a sort of unspoken subtext of a lot of conversations about Detroit. I agree with Professor Taylor that you don't want to paint too broad a brush.
Right.
You don't want to single out any one group of folks. I mentioned that you have the same phenomenon in Northern Britain with family dysfunction, so it's not racial. I think that, as I said in my column, there are certain things that government alone can't do. And Carl talked about it, about the cohesive family neighborhood, whether it's Irish, whether it's Italian, whether it's Polish, whether it's African American. One of the most powerful groups in the city is the Black Baptist pastors. They have a lot of political clout and a lot of social clout. And some pastors have devoted themselves to having religious schools, after-school programs, community outreach. And that's the kind of thing that Detroit needs more of, more informal, what Edmund Burke called the little platoons of society, the social network, the family, the neighborhood, the – if you're a Protestant, the congregation. Mm-hmm. If you're a Catholic, it's the parish. Mm-hmm. You have to have the men in the neighborhood watching out for the boys. You have to have the moms watching out for the girls. You have to have everybody watching out for everybody.
Just like Carl said he grew
exactly,
up with.
Exactly,
yeah. I want to take us looking forward, because that's certainly something that Kevin Orr is trying to do as he does the debt restructuring. He's also trying to put groundwork in effect to look forward. What happens when Detroit is out of bankruptcy, when Kevin Orr is gone, and here Detroiters are left to run their city? What do each of you believe are the most crucial and the most financially viable ways to tackle crime in Detroit? And I guess we're talking about what you think police could do, city officials could do, and the people of Detroit. Carl, I'd like to start with you.
Well, I'm completing a new – I did a study on a new book, which I called The Third City, and I have three core areas that you have to readdress in a different way. We're talking about dysfunctional families. We really have to address families. But I think we have to be careful not to choke on nostalgia. That includes myself. I think that you cannot prescribe necessarily one size that fits all. That one of our problems is that we look at – there's a certain group – in the community that has been rejected by everyone and everything. When I hear him speak of a faith-based institution, he is correct. However, we have a lot of children. In the studies that I have been doing since the 80s, a lot of children are not in anybody's church. We have a lot of children who are not in school, so therefore they cannot drop out of school. And so we really have to attack this in a new way, in a way that I think many of us are not really capable of doing in our first thought. You talk about those people. We have black people saying those people at times. It becomes a class issue. And then, of course, job training and employment. Those are the areas that we must go to, and we, you know, it sounds like the same song, but it's really not. A lot of these young men and women are not ready to go to work if they had the job. Their socialization has to be addressed, and it has to be addressed correctly. We will not be able to beat this up or lock it up or kill it. I'm serious. So I think that we have to address this in a different manner in which we have before. I've heard things about the police, and Detroit is not the only community. I think that the poor part of America is really revolting in a way that people don't understand, and they think they don't care. But as we're finding out in Michigan, So you can say Detroit can drop off in the river, but it's going to cost the state of Michigan and America a lot of money. It would make more sense to invest in education. This destruction of public education bothers me deeply because many of the schools, charter schools with all due respect, we keep leaving the same people out. And that population has grown immensely, whether you like it or not. It's those who are outside and are not allowed to participate, they're the ones who are feeding the criminal population. And we haven't quite understood that. Our politicians don't get it. Law enforcement is still grappling with it. We're spending more money on prison, so on. Those are the three areas that I would look at.
Well, I would simply say that as far as charter schools or alternative schools, if parents are interested enough to try to get their kids into a charter school or a school of choice, they ought to have that option. If they're not, then it falls to the public schools to try to be more proactive, to have teachers understand that theirs is not a 8:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. job, to stick with the kids, to tutor them, to follow their studies, and that's going to put more weight on the public schools. And that's something that they haven't been doing very well in the past, and they may have to step up and do that because Carl's right. The students who are excluded from opportunities are the ones who are fed into the crime. The city has cut the police from something like 4,000 to 2,700.
Right.
Uniformed officers are down from 3,000 in 2002 last year to 2,000. So in that 10 years, you've lost a third of your uniformed officers, and more are scheduled to retire this year and next year. So whatever the other city priorities are, you have to do the ground-level basics, which is have enough police available to respond to crime in a timely way. You have to have enough staffing. You have to have enough emphasis on a functioning department. That's the first thing you do. Then you have all the social issues that Carl and I have been talking about, and you can argue about which is best and which isn't, what works and what doesn't. However that is resolved, it's got to be addressed too, because you've got to stop the pipeline, and once they're in the pipeline, you've got to give them a deterrent. And if you don't do that, life for the vast majority of people in Detroit who are law-abiding and trying to make a life for themselves is, as Carl says, it's just unlivable.
Sadly, we're going to have to leave it there, but we would like to get you both back on to continue the conversation because it's great getting your insights, and we really appreciate both of you talking with us today. We've been speaking with Carl Taylor, professor of sociology at Michigan State University, and the former deputy editorial page director for the Detroit News, Jeff Haddon. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.